Hello and welcome to the 3W6 podcast from Muted Vienna, Season 11, Episode 16.
My name is Markus.
My name is Harald.
We're here to talk about pen and paper role-playing games.
And today we are joined by John Cole to talk about Chamber Labs, American Freeform, and other kinds of not-so-tabletop role-playing games.
Hi, this is John Cole. My pronouns are he, him, and his. I'm a game designer and sex educator in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So, John, I know you've done a lot of interesting games that aren't specifically like traditional tabletop role-playing games. So tell our audience, like, what's your backstory? How did you come to these games? Which ones have you designed? Like, what's your experience with all that stuff?
My nutshell would be, while I was illegally subletting my friend's closet looking for work after undergrad, a friend of mine loaned me Marcus Montala and Jakob Stenrus' Nordic LARP book, where I read about these fantastic LARPs that could not ever happen in the United States. And I swore that my five-year plan was to start making some of these incredible games happening by running the little teeny tiny chamber LARPs for my friends and tricking people into believing that LARP is cool. And soon they would be running me LARPs and I would be playing cool LARPs. And that is more or less what has happened here in Minneapolis, is making a little scene of people who are playing, like, I'm saying chamber LARPs. People argue about terminology all the time, but games I can play where I step up and walk away from the table, and I can do it in my living room for something like 3 to 15 people. Don't need to rent a giant venue, don't need to have mad money or costumes.
That's already a very helpful definition. I mean, in the podcast, we've talked about all kinds of games, ranging from more board gamey to, is this even a role-playing game? But we never really much talked about games that are not happening at the table. So, as you already alluded to, there's a lot of different terms and definitions. Would you walk through some of them so we better understand, like, what's the difference between a chamber LARP and a Nordic LARP and maybe an American freeform?
I almost want to say no, Harald. That would be like a whole podcast in and of itself. In the United States, anytime you step away from the table or stand up, it counts as a LARP. People in Europe firmly disagree, and that's okay. There's a whole genre of, like, Danish games played at Festival that consider themselves, like, a form of tabletop that you, like, might be rolling around on the floor or, like, expressing with your whole body. I don't care that we define it differently. It's clear that we're doing similar overlapping styles of play where the embodiment is from not just above the hips, but sometimes including below the hips as you move about the room.
I think that's actually a good point, because to clarify one basic term, LARP stands for live action role play.
Okay, sorry.
No, I think it's a good point to get back to that, because I think LARPs have been invented rather soon after tabletop role-playing games have been invented, right?
Yeah, totally.
And at least in Europe, my definition for the longest time was LARPs are kind of usually fantasy stuff that you do on some kind of derelict castle where everybody's dressing up and you're playing your role kind of like improv theater in a way, but with more rules that are usually complicated to enforce because you're not at the table and don't have dice and stuff. But obviously, there's a lot of different ways how you can interpret live action role playing.
You make an excellent point. Yes, you're describing whatever 90% of LARP that people think of. They think of those padded swords in the woods, which is a lovely style. And I'm most interested in bespoke games, like the equivalent of indie tabletop games for LARP. We're going to tell a game about alcoholism in a contemporary, like, Nordic family. Okay, there's no padded swords needed, no complicated mechanics. It's all focused around this experience of a family tragedy. One three-person game that takes just a couple hours. That, of course, is the classic cheap form game, Drunk.
Since I don't have a lot of experience in LARP, can you tell me more about, like, really how they work? For instance, characters. Are they generally written up by the game designer, or are there also LARPs, like indie LARPs in your style, where you make your own characters? Well, what's the space there?
The problem, fellas, is I know too much, so I can't give succinct answers that satisfy the listening public, because the answer is, of course, like all things, it depends. American Freeform is known for, like, workshops where we make our characters with a lot of overlap with, like, indie role-playing games, and Finnish LARP or American Litform LARP is known for giving people multi-page pre-written character sheets where you can really dive into the designer's specific vision for your specific character. So the answer is it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about facilitation? So also in the indie space, you have a lot of GM-less games, obviously, but you also have GM games. I'm guessing it's similar in your space. And How, if there is a facilitator, how is that role different from a GM in a TTRPG? Or do you mostly do GMless?
GMless is a rarity. I would say notable examples of GMless LARPs are Crescendo Giacosto and a couple of Italian LARP collections that were on Kickstarter and Indiegogo some years ago. But otherwise, LARPs are facilitated. They may be very minimally facilitated. Like, there's a number of games that come to mind where I run a series of workshops, and then I let the players, like, out into the wild. You know, there's 15 players, they've got enough connections, they basically run their own show, and I'm gonna pop in from now and then to say, you know, I'm your mother, and I'm very ashamed of you. Or, you know, here's a bag that represents all the explosives you've been hoarding. Or on the other end, if we're looking more like Nordic freeform, it is like an assertive improv director who's like, I want to see you two at the kitchen table. You know, you've finished dinner and now it's time for everyone to like get into the argument between this husband and wife. So again, on a spectrum of GM intervention, someone can choose high impact or low impact depending on their tastes.
Actually, I have no idea what the game is called because back then I didn't even know that like Nordic LARPs existed. I heard the term. Once played a game that was all set up, like the entire story was built on character backstory. So every character, you didn't create your own character, you got the character. There were no NPCs, all were like player characters, and every character had kind of like large backstory and certain like story hooks, situations, almost like a PBDA move. When this and this happens, do this and this. And the entire story was built on those hooks. So people reacted in a situation based on their hooks or whatever they wanted to do if they didn't have any hooks. And that all kind of like weaved together to create a story. I think there was somebody who kind of facilitated it, but they didn't really do much. So it was kind of a weird and interesting experience.
Yeah, the shocking truth is sometimes it's kind of boring to be a LARP facilitator because like the play is happening over there and you can't even tell by looking if people are having fun or not, because their characters might be having just a miserable time. They look like they're like feeling so gross, but inside they're like, yes, this is what I'm here for.
So my frame of reference is more like story games. So we've talked on the podcast, we talked about games like Society of Dreamers that fit that story game mold, but they feel pretty LARPy to me. Like, You have sort of scenes and rituals, and you could also do it standing up. And there's a lot of just interpersonal connection and scenes. So how have story games and LARP designs sort of informed one another, or how much overlap is there in your experience?
I certainly can't speak for everyone, but I think because of the accessibility of tabletop play. You only need, you know, two or three friends in your living room as opposed to 5 to 15 friends in your living room. Many, many people, at least in the US, got their entree into LARP from story games. Story games also offering like the bespoke experience. Like, is this game going to be one unbroken mono scene of mobsters playing cards, or is it going to be a series of scenes that only hit the highest impact moments? Design for the story, for me, is what makes excellent LARP, or whatever, excellent story to games as well. Perhaps also a willingness to address, quote, serious, unquote, themes, or things that are not traditional, like adventurous stories of becoming more powerful. But that, I think that might just be my aesthetic preferences, so I don't know. I've got a whole lot of nothing for you, is what it feels like.
As a thought here, how about safety tools? But for me, it feels like LARPs in particular, or any kind of game that I'm not playing at the table, for me, always has a bigger emotional bleed. Not sure why, probably because I'm moving around. I don't know. And that makes it feel like LARPy games probably benefit even more from safety tools. Is that an observation you can share? Are safety tools an integral, important part of LARPs, or is it like with story games, some do, some don't?
This is a value statement. I think that safety tools are an important part of LARP. Of course, it's not required. I think it's just unadvisable, because I certainly agree, both like in things I've experienced myself personally and seen other people. We role players, I think, are good about keeping things up. I'm an educator, so here in the prefrontal cortex, we make like great logical decisions together. But actually, your whole brain has got like, if you're getting all your body involved, even if you're having pretend emotions, they're still physiologically real in the back part of your brain. And so the prefrontal cortex helps us like contextualize, like it's a pretend emotion, it doesn't like affect my day to day. But I think the thrill, the emotional extreme sport of role-playing games, or especially LARP, is like having those pretend emotions that are physiologically real. And so a lot of the safety techniques in story games or in LARP are about helping people contextualize that after the fact. or like, you know, be able to pump the brakes or slow things down or adjust things during play. And there's, in that realm, there's a lot of aesthetic differences about when and how people want to do that to best support the style of play they want. That's, you know, we're all friends here and we can disagree fiercely, but we're all on the same team when it comes to making sure our pretend emotions are as fun as possible and bleed into our lives in ways that we want as opposed to get out of control.
So can you kind of like summarize in a way of what it is that draws you to LARP experiences? What's kind of like, because we talked a lot about like, there's a lot of emotional bleed. It is a different setup, how it kind of works and the different mentality you have to get into. So on the one hand, it feels just like another domain of role-playing games. But at the same time, because we have like a lot of heated discussions between like traditional role-playing tabletop role-playing games and indie and story-focused tabletop role-playing games, like what is it that draws somebody to playing LARPs? And what is it that might keep somebody from?
I do think that LARPs are like the final frontier, the pinnacle of the nerd fandom that people might have either justified or unjustified hesitations for doing something that is perhaps so stigmatized from the outside. I mean, I'm certainly wounded when political commentators look at American, whatever, gun-toting fascists and say they're LARPers. Like, oh, no, they're not invited. They're not cool enough to be LARPers. That's a side note. Just off the top of the dome here, anecdotally, I feel like sometimes people are drawn to LARP because they get to play pretty dress up and hang out with their friends. And that is awesome and welcome and an important part of the community. I think the same type of people who are into story games and indie games also drift into LARP because it's like hard hitting emotions, big feels right in your body, taking an empathy dive into a life that you can't live, haven't lived, don't want to live. Would like to live just to sample it for a slightly longer time or a slightly more visceral way. And speaking personally for me, I think I've spent so long as like a game master and scene setter in tabletop games that my immersion is kind of different. I'm thinking maybe behind the camera as an author, and I think in the mandated first-personness of LARPs, I'm more likely to slip into that subjective state of immersion for myself where I'm just, you know, feeling more of what the character feels. Of course, there's no such thing as pure immersion. I'm still thinking about my co-players to make, you know, the best play possible. But I'm a little less thinking about camera angles when I'm LARPing.
I mean, I think that sums it up pretty nicely because I think that is part of the hesitation. Also for me, because there are so many tabletop role-playing games, apart from the fact that this term is also, you know, covers a huge area of different kinds of games. It's like ball games in sports, right? There's just a lot of different games. But there is also many different ways to have fun and to play that game. And like this method acting kind of immersion and playing out the dialogue and getting into the emotion is just one of them. And so I'm thinking it will logically be a smaller subset of gamers who are drawn to this, who are also drawn to LARP. And while I enjoy playing my NPCs as a GM, I enjoy that a lot. I feel some hesitation to jump into a character like no safety net. I know there is a safety net, but it feels like without a safety net for a particular like a set amount of time. That's sort of my hesitation there, and I'm assuming that might be true for more people than just me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm definitely more choosy about like a LARP character that I'll embody either personally or for an extended period of time than a tabletop character, whatever, some sort of sadistic murdering NPC, no problem, sadistic murdering player character that I physically embody. That's certainly heavier to carry, and I'm going to want to talk to my co-players before and after. So yeah, you're definitely not the only one. Friend of a friend has tried LARP a couple times and connects so much with the character that it like really gets past their defenses in ways that are unpleasant. So, you know, they're sticking to tabletop and that makes sense for them as a person.
You guys brought a really interesting point up for me that is in a LARP, it's almost impossible to play in that style where you're mostly detached and kind of like discussing what's going on. In many story games, that's an at least available option, if not the preferred option. And I was just thinking about like my personal experiences, and I'm totally doing different things. Like on the table, I tend to don't go into the characters, but rather stay on like a meta level. And in a LARP, I'm totally in the character because there is no way to go on a meta level that much.
I certainly know a few people who do primarily relate to characters on that meta level and like basically don't do immersion even as LARPers, but I do think that the trend line is more towards immersion, as you say, Harald.
Yeah, I think it's just more difficult to stay on the meta level in the LARP. It's not impossible, and if that's your thing, you certainly can do it. But like in on average, people I think are more drawn into immersion and playing the characters. And the second thing I found really interesting is that what I experienced as LARPs in Austria in the beginning basically was traditional tabletop role-playing games like D&D, but in a cosplayed version in the woods. So yes, you create your own character. Yes, it's a wizard. You throw tennis balls as fireballs. It is all the stuff you experience and expect from a D&D game at the table, but now dressed up and with more immersion, air quotes. And to make that distinction between kind of like traditional role-playing games and LARPs and indie role-playing games and, let's say, chamber LARPs makes so much sense.
Yeah, and that owes a big relationship to what Nordic LARP has been doing since like the early 2000s. This may be old news for your listeners, but basically there was an aesthetic movement of like serious LARP about interesting topics using bespoke mechanics in like Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Denmark. And they had, compared to the United States, they had insurance, so if someone breaks their leg, they don't sue you. Like free time and money, the ability to use public land, unlikely to be, and what else? Oh, and also a conference where people get together once a year to talk about like LARPs they've been doing and share about LARP theory. And so that, I think, supercharged their ability to produce really interesting stuff. And also, they took tons of photographs and put those pictures online. So people like me were like, whoa, they look really cool, and wanted to get involved. So I think that is how, quote, Nordic LARP, unquote, has become the dominant, like, indie LARP equivalent across the world, though there are many, you know, regional subsets.
So I think our listeners don't know much about Nordic LARP. Did I understand this correctly? This just started in 2000s?
I'm going to get put in jail by the Nordic LARP elite, but probably in the late 90s, early 2000s.
That's younger than I expected.
Like, they've been definitely, like, people have been LARPing in the woods with padded swords forever, right, since the 70s. But I think things became aesthetically quite different around that time.
Yeah, that sort of underlines the theory that the whole story game revolution happened at the same time. So I think the rethinking of what role-playing games in general could be that happened in the early 2000s and continued from there. So that makes a lot of sense, at least in the back of my head. I wanted to ask you something else, and that is another potential similarity between story games and LARPs, and that's collaborative storytelling or story building. And I was wondering, because in story games, for me, that is one of the main draws, that you go to the table with just a few structures and procedures and maybe some prompts and some like creative guardrails. And then at the end, there is a story, or at least the bare bones of a story, that just wasn't there in the beginning, and you did it collaboratively. Nobody prepared for that except the game. Is that something that happens in chamber LARPs as well?
I would say it can, or I guess I think we'll like create a stretchy definition of how much collaboration happens. If I'm given a big old character sheet, I'm thinking of like the game that Harald mentioned that has this fate play of these interactions that seem bound to happen. My interpretation of the character and how the characters bounce off one another is definitely still creative collaboration, but is definitely of a different kind than what's happening in what you've described, Marcus, of like the classic story game where we don't even know what continent our game is on or whether it's about a family or a circus until we start playing. This is a little like, as always, from the hip, off the top of the dome. I think the creative vulnerability of LARP means that it's a little harder for people to opt in. So most often, LARPs have a more specific, like, this is a LARP about a family in crisis. And so, like, it's a little more constrained than, like, a story game where it's like, you know, microscope, we're playing some kind of history about something so wide open. So I think people, it's both easier on the design end and lets people opt in. And I guess, at risk of making a slightly inappropriate comparison, in like BDSM or consensual power exchange, people give up a lot of control and choices to have a very intense experience with a very limited amount of choices. And I think that might be the average LARP experience. Like, here is Lady Grey, who runs the manor, and she has the specific issue with her daughter. And you get to just be Lady Grey as hard as you can for 4 hours, as opposed to deciding what the deal is with Lady Grey's family.
I mean, there's that subset in story games as well. Even if you take like something like Fiasco, where you have all kinds of different playsets and you can, as you say, play as a circus or as a family, in the end, it's always the same kind of story. In the end, it's always like that heist gone wrong or those like big ambitions and big egos and everything going down the drain. So I think that is actually pretty much, at least for a big subset of story games, what is happening there as well. You have strict narrative structures, but within those structures there is a lot of freedom to just, you know, embody your characters and push forward the narrative. But you know, you might have a very clear start and end of scenes or start and end of the plot or a very clear definition of your character. So I have made this comparison in the past as well, that you have like in a traditional TTRPG like D&D, you might have the total freedom of anything can happen, but you have like constrictions when it comes to the simulation part. And in the narrative kind of style, that's sort of the other way around, where you have narrative constrictions, but within those narrative constrictions there's no GM telling you this is what happens and I'm telling you who the opposition is, because that can happen sort of in a freeform way. I didn't explain that very succinctly, but I hope you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I'll give a response about what I think your average, like, this is such a generalization, but your average LARP is like seeking specificity, but because it works differently, it's not mechanical structures on the story. It's like lots of implicit guidance about what's going to happen here, and then maybe one or two like key meta techniques. So I guess like drawing from my own work, I wrote a game with Kelly Vanda called The Abortionists about 1970s abortion providers in Chicago doing illegal abortion work. And so there are like not a lot of this is maybe not the best example of my own work. All right, I'm cooking on it. All right, I'll do Glamorous Night, a LARP about like fairies and magic in medieval Europe. And basically, it's like you move about this space abstractly with a... No, this is another bad example. All right. Man, I guess my work tends to have like structure cooked in story game style, but a lot of LARPs are like, it doesn't tell you where scenes begin and end. It doesn't tell you who to talk to or when. It's just like you're a space marine on the spaceship and you've got 72 hours to live life as a space marine. I don't know, Marcus, I might be coming around to your position. I was thinking that implicit guidance is the way for LARP, but there's a lot of LARPs that have guidance that is more deft than some story games can be, but it might be just as effective. But I'm not full of good concrete examples, so I'm sorry.
That actually tails into another question I have, like, again, what your personal experience is here. In my experience, it feels like LARPs tend to have less mechanical parts, in the sense of here you have a stat, take a dice, roll something, figure out what the result is, interpret it in the situation, and then continue play. On the one hand, because it usually is too disruptive for the situation. On the other hand, because, as you just described, so many, especially chamber LARPs, where it's not just, I mean, there are huge LARPs where you have like hundreds of people and then you have to just get a roll and you play it for 72 hours and that's it. But the smaller it feels a LARP gets and the more specific the story is it wants to tell, the more you have like the stuff you just struggled to describe, where yeah. There is some kind of guidance, but it's not like mechanical. It's not like there are specific rules that grip certain situations. It's more like, let's set up this scene. Let's introduce this factor. It is small interventions that are definitely present in story games. I think it's this whole discussion about mechanics versus procedures that Marcus and I have from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like LARPs are leaning more towards procedures and less towards mechanics, especially if they're smaller.
I think you've cleft their way to the heart of the issue, Harold. Yeah, thinking of like Catherine and Hakan's game Sign. Like your characters have a little card right up, and then each scene you're basically given a little character impulse, like you want to connect with other people or you want to describe what's important to you about what's going on at home. And there's maybe, I think, 3 to 5 scenes where it just gives you the littlest suggestion about what you want to do. But that drives so much play because everyone is like, you know, sort of meta-narratively, this is the last scene where I need to use the sign language I've created with these other children to communicate like my heart's truth about my relationship with my grandma. That's great stuff, and it does it in a way that is more procedural than mechanical, but just as, I think, lockstep and effective as something like, here's the communication scene.
But you have a seed structure in sign, you know, that there is, I struggle to remember the names now, but basically there are lessons and there's free time, right? Mm-hmm. Or recess, I think it's recess. Lessons and recess. So there is basically phases, like in Blade in the Dark.
It's the mixture of all those things, because if you look at sign from like a mechanical perspective, it's very simple. You have kind of like an elaborate prompt for each lesson and each recess. Those are mostly scenes that are kept to a certain time limit. And after that, it's just do whatever you want to do.
And I've seen sign run like a story game, and I've seen sign run like a LARP. Like the scene ends, we're like, okay, everyone, you know, good play. Anyway, here's what's coming next. And I've also seen sign run by LARPers for LARPers, where they're like, the facilitator as the teacher is like, okay, everyone, time to come in from recess. And they just sort of let the sort of smooth, natural, continuous transition between all these scenes. It's a great game either way, but I think they show the evidence of the different traditions.
Totally. And that's a very good example of where you can play it on a meta level, but you can also play it on a very immersive level.
I'm coming up with another hypothesis, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm thinking, like in traditional TTRPGs and in story games, there is often one or many conflict resolution mechanics, right? And I'm getting the feeling that in chamber LARPs or in traditional LARP, there is something like that, because I've read Vampire LARPs, where you do things to find out who is stronger and who wins the mind game and whatever. It's not all about conversation. But I'm getting the feeling that in chamber LARPs, you don't need that, because it's generally not about finding out who wins the conflict, right?
Agreed. I mean, if a chamber LARP is all about conflict, then a conflict mechanic makes sense, but I think most are not. I'm thinking of, oh gosh, I'm probably going to get the name wrong. There's a LARP about like honorable duel between like Englishmen of certain age, and the LARP is like about everything around the duel, and the duel itself is like some absolutely super simple throwaway thing, because it's actually about being in camp and talking with your second and whatever, getting wrapped up in toxic masculinity. Can you say your hypothesis again, Marcus, to make sure I'm like trying to give you a vibe? I think I agree with your hypothesis.
Yeah. So in story games, you often have like a one singular conflict resolution mechanic. Like, I don't know, you hand the black die to another person in Fiasco, or you have a roll of dice in 10 candles even, and to see who gets to tell what, right? And I'm getting the feeling that in chamber LARPs, while chamber LARPs are obviously about interpersonal conflicts and interpersonal dynamics, and it's about, you know, I don't know, family structures or group structures or factions or what people want or need or hate or love, it's not about having some sort of mechanic or some sort of randomizer that tells you, or even a GM that tells you, okay, you win or you lose, or this is how this scene ends.
Yes, I agree. On average, you are correct. A lot more, quote, law of drama, unquote, unfolding in LARP.
Two observations here. One is, I played Vampire LARPs for the longest time. And like there's an official Vampire LARP that was written in the 90s. And it has some actual mechanic, like you play to
rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Thank you. To figure out who wins some kind of conflict. And I played these kind of Vampire LARPs, and they very much felt like the dress up, go to a castle, cosplay your vampire character, and you just exist as your character. You encounter situations where you need to resolve a conflict, and that's about it. And then I still remember vividly the first time I read an official Vampire LARP adventure, which they wrote and published in White Wolf magazine. And it was a chamber LARP. It was like five people in a room. It's a murder mystery. And there was no conflict. It never happened that you actually had to figure out who's stronger and somebody is in something, because it was so much about the interpersonal drama and like how people reacted and how they played out that character and so on. And I was really fascinated that you can play the same kind of game in two very different ways, and it obviously works in both ways.
There's been some interesting bespoke LARPs coming out of the, for better lack of a better word, the Vampire LARP community. There was a 2016 World of Darkness festival that commissioned new LARPs, and there's some wild and weird specific ones from that. So Just the people out there, you should know there's still ways to get your vampire LARP scratched without having to throw a single rock, paper, or scissors. Like Pablo Valcarcel has one about people who are basically in an abusive relationship with vampires having a support group. And so it's really about the people who get the shit end of the stick in vampire world. Or Evan Torner's got Hell's Other Vampires, which is a Reservoir Dogs in a church basement with vampires. Or there's even now those large bespoke, like night-long ones like The Night in Question in Austin, Texas, where there are a few like mechanics to help people know the difference between vampire power levels, but largely it's story and consent that makes the evil vampire powers happen.
Can you draw a line to improvisational theater, or can you not? Because I think that's a bit of a cliche also in the back of my mind. It's that it's sort of, we go there to do improv.
I took some improv so I could get better at LARP, so like there's definitely some overlap. Their practical skills training is good. People do improv theater because they're thinking about an audience, whether that is to make the audience, you know, think dramatic things or simply laugh. There's a lot of emphasis about like cheating out and projecting and things like that. In LARP, however, you're playing for the first person audience. You're playing for your own experience of playing that character. So I've definitely seen people in LARPs like wander away into a corner and sit pensively by themselves for 15 minutes. That person was in play. They were having fun. They didn't need to, you know, project their inner thoughts, or people having a side conversation are in play. It's okay that it doesn't come out all before us. That's the connection that I see. The difference in styles, the difference in approach.
It also, to me, it feels less like acting because it's your interpretation of a character. I mean, obviously the same is true at the table, but at the same time in a LARP, maybe it's that performance aspect with no audience. You're playing that character the way you think that character should be played and behaves, and there's no right and wrong, and there's no audience that tells you this is a great interpretation or not. It's all about your fun.
Yeah, your fun, your co-player's fun.
And I'm guessing you don't have to be a great actor to be a great LARPer, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly it doesn't hurt if you can, like, whatever, summon big feelings or tears as needed. And if someone is adding dynamically to the story, you know, in that same way that we appreciate people who, like, get things going and make big decisions in story games, that is, you know, the makings of a great LARPer.
Now you mentioned tears, I have to bring up another stereotype, if I may. Because one of my best friends, he laughs about some of the story games I play and say, you go there to cry. And this is sort of the stereotype I have, I think, myself when it comes to chamber labs. People go there to cry. Is that true? And why is that fun?
Yeah, I think that stereotype is at least a little true. I sometimes go there to cry. Other people I know go there to cry. Having a LARP cry, unquote, is like often the hallmark of a good longer form LARP experience. I don't know. I didn't go to therapy school. It's hard to say why. Let me take a moment to think, see if anything comes to mind. It's probably no deeper than like catharsis or like a response to aesthetic beauty, like anyone who might cry at whatever, the opera or watching a movie.
But I think it really ties back to what we talked about before, that if you don't like emotional bleed, if this is a too intense experience for you every time you do it, then you probably won't do it. You only go into LARPs if you enjoy that kind of experience.
Yeah, the emotional extreme sport of LARP for sure. Like there's some risks which we mitigate, but it's not totally chill either.
I've certainly cried at the cinema and at the opera before, so guilty. So I have no reason not to do it in games. And I've cried in games as well, just to mention.
Yeah,
that.
So, yeah, me too.
Yeah, of course.
I've been to only a handful of operas, but again, I don't live in Vienna, so.
Good point. Next time you're here, I'll get you a ticket.
Great, sounds great.
One sidetrack observation I wanted to bring up is, as you mentioned, conflicts, Marcus. It also feels to me that if you embody a character, you at the same time are more tied into the limitations of that character. It's like in D&D, it's kind of easy to play a murder hobo because if you choose the stats accordingly, you just can do that. In a LARP situation, you're more on the one side tied to who you as a person like physically are, and at the same time tied to the kind of character you embody. And I personally don't know many LARPs that ask you to embody super physical fit killing machines and all that kind of like ties together to make you a bit more reluctant to engage in the kind of physical conflict that a lot of role-playing games often put center stage. So it feels like a lot of the conflicts stay on a more emotional or intellectual level, maybe a bit of like physical, not even combat. It's just like physicality that gets expressed in the situation.
This makes me realize that some of my favorite pieces of like minimal but impactful ARP design are about aligning the player's embodied experience with what their characters would be and making sure that those feel similar. I'm thinking of Nidarune Essendorp and Simon Steen Hansen's famous LARP White Death, which is like an abstract physical LARP about going to the top of a mountain and dying, right? This is pure Danish freeform stuff right here. And at the beginning of the LARP, you are humble, sad little people who have these physical constraints that they can't move freely or competently, and they struggle over scarce resources. And once they are swept away to die, it's so abstract you don't know for sure, you have this free, wide, expressive, fluid way of moving that you are allowed to move in. So the invitation is move in these herky-jerky, constrained ways, and then you're like freed, liberated, and physically transformed by death. And so the pitiful scrabbling of your life contrasted with like the sweet release of death, what could be more Danish, for me was a very beautiful aesthetic experience and grounded me. Those were the mechanics that grounded me in that physical, what my body was doing was the same as what was not literally the same as what my character was doing, but had the same feeling, produced the same emotion. So physical changes to produce emotions that are similar to the character, which may or may not be about conflict. That was a wandering tale, but there it is. I hope that was semi on topic to what you're thinking of, Harald.
Totally. I think that's also probably a barrier for myself and other people like me, where we say it's about physical expression, sometimes with total strangers. And I think that's a hurdle to get over.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I will say that I love a weird abstract dance LARP, but I do think that it's at the top of the pinnacle of like role-playing strangeness that is not for everyone. Compared to, I don't know, like in the famous LARP by Tikke Edlund and Hannah Grasmo, Just Old 11, whenever characters have sex, whatever level of physicality, I'm hand-waving that for now, you pause and stand side by side and the characters have a brief like mental aside where they talk about what they're feeling. Like one character's like, you know, I'm falling in love, I've never felt closer to someone, and someone else is like, I could really go for a hot dog right now, I'm kind of hungry. And the point is, you know, to use dramatic irony, another technique to reveal the character's emotions to one another, to produce story elements, that's more in the realm of what someone who's a little less enthusiastic about physicality than me could get into. But so anyway, I cut you off, Marcus. What were you thinking about?
Yeah, that's a really good point. For sure, there's also a spectrum there. And probably it's, for me as the perennial overthinker, it's probably easier to get there on an intellectual level compared to a physical level. So I'm sure there's a LARP out there for me, or probably several. And if I'm being honest, if I look at some of my story game experiences in the past, and even some of the more extreme pen and paper like Call of Cthulhu adventures I've done, let's be honest, those were LARPs. Yeah, those were chamber LARPs with the serial numbers filed off. But I think that also informed me about my personal tastes and likes and dislikes when it comes to that.
It feels like a good summary here is that especially chamber LARPs can be a very interesting experience for people who like story games. But you totally should read the cats of whatever game you're playing to figure out if all the moving parts that are present in this game are something for you. What's the physicality like? What's the story about? What will the emotional bleed be? And so on. There's a lot of stuff you should become aware before playing a game. And I think like the best games and facilitators work to provide you with all that insights. That's also kind of like why, I mean, I once had the opportunity to play John's Ars Magica LARP, and we had like 2 or 3 hours of workshop, 1 hour of gameplay, and 2 or 3 hours of debriefing. And that was like the perfect amount of time for everything, because it takes a while to kind of like get into that thing and feel comfortable with what you should do and how to do it and so on. But if you have that space and if you can get into that, then I think it's accessible for a lot of people.
Please don't let my overly workshop LARPs be representative for all. There's definitely an aesthetic trend towards minimalizing extreme and streamlining workshops whenever possible, because I think it is a sin common to gamers that care and designers that care to have too much workshop in their story game and not enough play, or trying to right size it. So I don't know. That's something I'm thinking about in my designs. And I think story games, you know, like there's so much secret workshop baked into the Fall of Magic that like it steps you through as you start play. And I think that's really clever design from, you know, Kalman.
Maybe to slowly start wrapping this up, do you have any recommendations for entry-level LARPers like me, Harold, or John? What kind of games should we look at?
If your price point is the same as mine was when I was, you know, illegally renting a closet, then Alexandria.dk has every cool game coming out of Denmark for free. Here in the Twin Cities, we published our beginner-friendly intended LARPs in two anthologies, the Mikasin anthologies, that Harold helped do some layout for. So, you know, we're not neutral parties here, but we really wrote those games to be as accessible as possible for first-time LARPers. But there's lots of great options like Crescendo Giacosto and LARPs from the Factory, things coming out of the Golden Cobra, yeah.
But John, you mentioned your own games, but only in passing. Maybe you want to tell us more about what you did and add a plug or two?
Sure. At johncole.itch.io is where my stuff is at. I think I'm known for writing two games about abortion access with Kelly Vanda, The Abortionist and All Options. All Options won, quote, the awards in like 2022. And those are games about U.S. history. Those are the big ones that are out. I've also written this abstract game about fairies and wizards, originally based on Ars Magica, but I haven't laid it out yet. So I'm sorry it's not available. Feel free to email me, and I'm happy to share materials. I was like, if there's anything else I was going to plug, if you happen to live within proximate striking distance to Minneapolis, Minnesota, our annual premier LARP convention is happening August 16th through 18th, called Make a Scene. There's lots of amazing premier scenario festivals in Europe, a particular style, looking for bold, exciting, dramatic, heart-wrenching LARPs. Nothing like that exists in North America except for Make a Scene. So I'm confident that 99% of your viewers live in German-speaking nations, but if you happen to live nearby, we'd be happy to see you at Make a Scene.
Anything new you're working on and want to give us a sneak peek on?
Just in the realm of ideas, let's talk about a bathhouse LARP with a friend. So maybe there's a way to make a bathhouse LARP of some kind. If people have ideas for making a bathhouse LARP, feel free to reach out. I'd love to collaborate.
I'm assuming nudity here?
Not for the human players, but certainly for the characters, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us, John. This was really insightful for me as a total noob.
Thank you for asking so many questions and being open to learn. I hope I did the LARP community right and offered information that is more or less accurate.
If anybody is not happy with anything, bring it to us. John did a great job.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for listening to episode 16 of season 11.
We'd love to read your feedback on our Discord server or on our website at 3w6.fm.
If you liked this episode, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify.
Or even support us on Patreon.
Thank you so much, and until next time.